following is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church in Soddy Daisy, Tennessee, featuring the teaching of Pastor Alan Rogers. In the Metro Chattanooga area, we invite you to be our guest at any of our weekly worship services or visit us online at newsalembaptist.net. Now here's Pastor Alan.
Sometimes it's hard for moms to get any respect. There was a fourth grade teacher who was trying to teach a lesson on magnetism. So she gave a little pop quiz. She asked the kids to give her a six-letter word, starts with M, that picks things up. Over half the class put M-O-T-H-E-R. There was a four-year-old and a six-year-old got together, got in their piggy banks and pulled their money together to buy their mom a beautiful potted plant for Mother's Day. And because they spent their own money, of course, she was thrilled about it. But the six-year-old had kind of a pouty look on her face as they were handing this over. And she said, "Mom, there was another bouquet at the flower shop we really wanted to get you, but it was just too expensive. I mean, it was beautiful. It was so pretty. And it had this pretty ribbon on it that would have fit you perfectly. Rest in peace." "Mom, you're always telling us about how you like a little peace so you can get some rest." You know, being a good mother is not easy. For that matter, neither is being a good father. Being a parent is at the same time one of the most rewarding and most challenging things you will ever take on. Thankfully, the Bible is full of advice and examples on how to be a good parent. It's also got some examples on what not to do. But one of the good examples is a godly lady named Hannah, whose story we find in the first couple of chapters of the book of 1 Samuel. Now, before we dive into that passage, a couple little disclosures in order. First of all, 10 years ago, on Mother's Day 2011, I taught on this same passage. Now, at that time, we posted both the audio and the printed notes on our website. And wouldn't you know it, that message has gone on to become one of the most requested sermons we've ever posted. 2 years ago, when we moved to our new website, we did not move a lot of that older material over. But even to this day, it is still one of the most searched for items on our new website. I checked the last 7 days, I think 34 people have tried to access that sermon. Apparently, they bookmarked it the first time they found it and tried to go back to it. That tells me apparently it struck a chord with some people. So I've decided to revisit this passage this year for a fresh look. Besides, our church has changed an awful lot in the last 10 years. And so there's a good chance many of you never heard that original message. Second thing is I need to give some credit where credit is due. The original idea for this message and the five main points on the outline were inspired by a guy named Brian Bill, who's a pastor in Illinois. I found his sermon on this passage when I was doing my research on the passage originally, and just found it very helpful the way he organized. Now, I've kind of taken things in a little different direction than he did, but I still want to give a hat tip and say I appreciated his insights. It really helped me as I tried to work through this passage. So with that behind us, let's move on to Hannah's story and the things that we can learn from this godly lady to help us as we are trying to be godly parents. And one of the first things we can learn from Hannah is that godly parents wrestle with real problems. Starting in chapter 1, verse 1. "Now there was a certain man from Ramathaim Zophim from the hill country of Ephraim, and his name was Elkanah, the son of Jeroram, the son of Elihu, the son of Tohu, the son of Zuth, an Ephraimite. He had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah. The name of the other was Peninnah. And Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. Now this man would go from his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice to the Lord of hosts in Shiloh. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were priests to the Lord there. When the day came that Elkanah sacrificed, he would give portions to Peninnah his wife and all of her sons and daughters. But to Hannah he would give a double portion, for he loved Hannah. But the Lord had closed her womb. Her rival, however, would provoke her bitterly to irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb. It happened year after year. As often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she would provoke her so that she wept and would not eat. Then Elkanah, her husband, said to her, 'Hannah, why do you weep? And why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not better to you than 10 sons? You see, some people have this mistaken idea that godly people never have any problems. Okay? No, that's not true. Hannah reminds us that godly people do have problems. They are not exempt from trouble. The difference is how they handle their problems. They trust God with their problems. Now, Hannah faced a long list of challenges. First of all, Hannah lived in a politically and socially unstable land. This is taking place during that chaotic period in Israel's history known as the period of the Judges, when, according to Judges 17:6, there was no king in Israel. Every man did what was right in his own eyes. So it was a very chaotic, lawless time. It was the Old West. Even the religious leadership was corrupt. In verse 3, the writer makes a point to mention these two sons of Eli, who was the head priest at that time, Hophni and Phinehas. And we get into chapter 2 and we find out these guys were pretty ungodly, even though they were priests. They had a reputation for dishonesty and philandering. However, it was through Hannah, this godly woman, that God would set in motion the events that would eventually lead to the anointing of Israel's very first king. Hannah was also challenged, as we read, by being forced to share the attention of her husband. Hannah's husband, Elkanah, had two wives. Now, the Bible is clear from the very beginning that God's plan originally was for one man, one woman to be united together in a covenant of marriage for life. However, Hannah and her family lived in a culture where polygamy was both accepted and practiced. That doesn't mean that God approved of it, but that's a lot of people saw no problem with that. They lived that way. Here's the interesting thing, though. In most cases where polygamy is portrayed in the Old Testament, it is not a pleasant picture. These relationships are often characterized by strife and rivalry. And that's exactly what we see right here. While Elkanah loved Hannah, she and his other wife did not get along. They were competitors for his attention and his affection. And on top of all that, Hannah was challenged by infertility. Now, some of you are well aware of the special pain that goes along with that. Unfortunately for Hannah, she lived in a culture where a woman's value often was judged primarily for her ability to bear children. Hannah's rival, Peninnah, had given birth to several children, and she never passed up an opportunity to hold that fact over Hannah's head. So Hannah had a lot of problems, and Hannah's problems affected her deeply. She shed tears. She refused to eat. She had all the signs of what we would call depression. And these problems even affected her relationship with her husband, as we saw. Now, Hannah didn't wallow in her circumstances, but instead, she took her circumstances to the Lord. Hannah's family made annual trips to the central sanctuary there in Shiloh to worship. And so during one of those trips, Hannah sought the Lord's help. And this is the second thing we can learn from Hannah's story. Not only do godly parents have problems, but godly parents pray powerful prayers. Picking up in verse 9. Then Hannah rose after eating and drinking in Shiloh. Part of the religious ceremony there, they would have a sacrifice, and then they would cook the meat from the sacrifice, and then they would actually have a meal together where they would share that. So Hannah arose after that meal. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She was greatly distressed, prayed to the Lord, and wept bitterly. She made a vow and said, O Lord of hosts, if you will indeed look on the affliction of your maidservant and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a son, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and a razor shall never come upon his head. Now it came about as she continued praying before the Lord that Eli was watching her mouth. As for Hannah, she was speaking in her heart. Only her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. So Eli thought she was drunk. And Eli said to her, How long will you make yourself drunk? Put away your wine from you. But Hannah replied, No, my Lord, I am a woman oppressed in spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have poured out my soul before the Lord. Do not consider your maidservant as a worthless woman, for I have spoken until now out of my great concern and provocation. Then Eli answered and said, go in peace, and may the God of Israel grant your petition that you have asked of him. She said, let your maidservant find favor in your sight. So the woman went her way and ate, and her face was no longer sad. So Hannah poured out her concerns before God and then trusted him for the results. You've heard about leaving it at the altar. That's what she did. Hannah prayed so fervently that Eli thought she was drunk. And in that prayer, Hannah asked God to give her a son. And in return, she promised to dedicate that son to the Lord. Now, this is interesting. Well, she promised to turn him over to the priest to be raised there at the tabernacle. And typically, according to the law of Moses, only descendants of the tribe of Levi were allowed to work alongside the priest. And as we saw in verse 1, Hilkiah apparently was counted as a member of the tribe of Ephraim. Now, that's led some scholars to think maybe Hilkiah actually was a Levite. The Levites, they didn't have land of their own. They lived scattered out among the tribes. So maybe he was a Levite, just happened to be living in the territory of Ephraim. We don't know. In any case, all we do know for sure is that she made this commitment that if God would give her a son, she would turn him over to the priest to be raised. Hannah promised to also to bind her son with what's called a Nazarite vow. That's what it means, that you know, when the statement, the razor shall never come upon his head. The Nazarites were a very special group of people who were specially dedicated to the Lord by an oath. And we read about this in the book of Numbers, chapter 6. One of the signs of being a Nazarite, being under this special oath, was that he or she was not allowed to cut their hair for as long as the oath was in effect. Now, typically, this Nazarite vow was only made for a specific duration of time, but Hannah's commitment was her son would be a Nazarite from the time he was born on, specially dedicated to the Lord. Now, today, we may not turn our kids over to be raised at the temple, but there does come a point where all children have to entrust their kids into the Lord's hands. No matter how much you want to hover over them, you can't supervise them at all times for their entire life. Sooner or later, we have to trust them to do the right thing even when we're not looking. And at some point, all we can do is entrust them into God's hands. Sadly, sometimes our children will choose to rebel against what we've tried to teach them. At those times, it is even more important that we commit them into the Lord's care. There was once a woman named Monica who had a very gifted and intelligent son. And after he finished his education, he left home to secure a prestigious position in the capital city, teaching public speaking to law students and future politicians. That was a very big deal in their society. And although he had been raised in a Christian home, like a lot of college kids, he abandoned his Christian faith when he left home. And he soon developed a reputation for wild parties and chasing women. His mom also heard rumors that her son had gotten mixed up. Not only had he rejected Christianity, but he'd gotten mixed up in this weird Eastern cult. So she's really concerned about him and the lifestyle he was living. So she prayed for him regularly. She continually sought her pastor's help in praying for her wayward son. And she drove this poor pastor crazy, coming to him all the time, "Pastor, please pray with me about my son and the lifestyle he's living and how far he's wandered away from the Lord." And finally, probably just to get her off his back, the pastor told her, "Go home, because," quote, "it cannot be that the son of so many tears should be lost." Later, one of her son's close friends had a near-death experience, and that led Monica's son to reconsider the Christian faith he had been brought up in. Near-death experience will tend to do that sometimes. And after studying the New Testament, he gave his heart to Christ, and he went on to become probably the most influential Christian theologian this side of the Apostle Paul. Today, some people even call him Saint Augustine. But it was a mother's prayers that played a role in bringing him back to the Lord. If you've raised a rebel, don't stop praying. Don't give up. Keep turning them over to the Lord. Godly parents also trust that God will provide. In verse 19, then they arose early in the morning and worshiped before the Lord and returned again to their house in Ramah. And Elkanah had relations with Hannah, his wife, and the Lord remembered her. It came about in due time, after Hannah had conceived, that she gave birth to a son and named him Samuel, saying, because I have asked him of the Lord. So after learning or leaving her burden with the Lord and receiving encouragement from Eli the priest, Hannah went home. Her new countenance demonstrated that she was trusting in God to answer her prayers. And in due time, God granted her request, and she gave birth to a son. She gave him the name Samuel, which literally means God heard. Every time she called her son, Samuel, she was reminded God had heard her prayer. God was faithful. Now, if we're going to be honest, we have to admit, sometimes God does not give us what we want. Instead, he gives us what we need. God heard Hannah and gave her what she requested because it fit his plan to prep the ground for Israel to get a king. However, he could just as easily have called Hannah to keep trusting him for her provision without giving her a son. He could have said, Hannah, you need to find your fulfillment in me. Consider the experience of the Apostle Paul that he records for us in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Paul had something he called a thorn in the flesh. We don't know what it was. It was some kind of physical debilitating condition that interfered with his quality of life and his ability to minister. And Paul says on three separate occasions, he begged God, please, Lord, take this away. And every time the answer came back, no. And God finally expressed to him, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect or displayed in weakness. God gave Paul what he needed, not what he wanted. And sometimes he does the same thing with us. Several years ago, Garth Brooks had a song, Thank God for Unanswered Prayers. Some of y'all are a little too young to remember that one. Garth who? Brooks sings about running into an old high school flame. And this was the girl that at the time when he was in high school, he thought this was the one he wanted to spend the rest of his life with. But now, years later, let's just say the bloom had come off the rose. And so he is sitting there saying, thank you, Lord, for not listening to me when I prayed that prayer. And the refrain goes, sometimes I thank God for unanswered prayers. Remember when you're talking to the man upstairs. Just because he doesn't answer doesn't mean he don't care. Some of God's greatest gifts are unanswered prayers. God gives us what we need, not necessarily what we think we want. Seek God in prayer as you seek to raise your children. But trust, he's going to provide what we need, even if he doesn't give us what we want. Fourthly, godly parents keep their promises. In verse 21, then the man Elkanah went up with all his household to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and to pay for his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, I will not go up until the child is weaned. Then I will bring him, that he may appear before the Lord and stay there forever. Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you. Remain until you've weaned him. Only may the Lord confirm his word. So the woman remained and nursed her son until she weaned him. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her, with a three-year-old bull and one ephah of flour and a jug of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, although the child was young. Then they slaughtered the bull and brought the boy to Eli. And she said, oh my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I'm the woman who stood here beside you praying to the Lord. For this boy I prayed, and the Lord has given me my petition which I asked of him. So I have also dedicated him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he's dedicated to the Lord. And he worshiped the Lord there. Hannah kept her word, even though it cost her. When Samuel had been weaned, which probably means he was about 3 or 4 years old, Hannah made good on her promise to turn him over to the priest to serve at the sanctuary. Now, think about that for a minute. Think about how hard she had prayed for this boy, and now she's had him for 3 years, and yet, think about the faith it took to turn this son, whom she had waited for so long, over to the care of strangers. Think about that. And consider, Hannah was entrusting her son into the care of Eli, who didn't exactly have the best record when it came to raising his own boys. But Hannah made a vow to the Lord, and she intended to keep it. Now, our children need to see us as people of integrity. Our children need to observe us demonstrating honesty and integrity in everything we do, even and perhaps especially when it costs us to do so. Stuart Briscoe once wrote about being hired to work in a bank when he was a young man. And at the time, he was young, he was new, he was just learning the business. And one day his boss said, "If Mr. Smith calls, tell him I'm out." And so Briscoe said, "Well, are you planning to go somewhere?" And the boss said, "No, I just don't want to talk to him. So tell him I'm not here." And Briscoe said, "Well, let me make sure I understand you here. Are you asking me to lie for you?" And the boss got furious. He was outraged. And Briscoe prayed real quick, you know, "Lord, give me wisdom." And all of a sudden he's had this inspired thought. And he said, "Hey, listen, boss, you should really be happy about this. I mean, if I won't lie for you, is it not safe to assume I won't lie to you?" That's integrity. That's consistency. And our kids need to see us demonstrate that kind of honesty. And this kind of integrity is as much caught as it is taught. Our children need to know that our word is good. They need to know when we say, "Don't cross this line or there'll be consequences," there are going to be consequences. Trust me, I know how hard it is sometimes to hold that line. They also need to know that when we say, "I love you," we mean it. We need to show them that we keep our word. And then finally, from Hannah's story, we see that godly parents remember where their true strength lies. In chapter 2, the opening verses there, we have this, Hannah just has this song of praise that bubbles out of her. Hannah prayed and said, "My heart exults in the Lord. My horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth speaks boldly against my enemies because I rejoice in your salvation. There is no one holy like the Lord. Indeed, there is no one beside you, nor is there any rock like our God. Boast no more so ever proudly. Do not let arrogance come out of your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and with him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty are shattered, and the feeble gird on strength. Those who were full hire themselves out for bread, and those who were hungry cease to hunger. Even the barren gives birth to seven, because she who has many children languishes. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to Sheol and raises up. The Lord makes poor and rich. He brings low. He also exalts. He raises the poor from the dust. He lifts the needy from the ash heap to make them sit with nobles and inherit a seat of honor. For the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he sets the world on them. He keeps the feet of his godly ones, but the wicked ones are silenced in darkness. For not by might shall a man prevail. Those who contend with the Lord shall be shattered. Against them he will thunder in the heavens. God will judge the ends of the earth, and he will give strength to his king and will exalt the horn of his anointed." Then Elkanah went to his home at Ramah, but the boy ministered to the Lord before Eli the priest. Hannah remembered that God is in control, and every blessing ultimately comes from his hand. Every good thing in your life ultimately is a gift from God. Don't ever forget that. Being a parent is a rewarding job, but it's one that can only be performed well with the Lord's help. Someone once remarked, becoming a mother is not too difficult. Being a mother is very much so. Same thing can be said for a father. But through the Bible and the guidance of the Holy Spirit, God can help you be a good parent. Abraham Lincoln is reported to have said once, "No man is poor who's had a godly mother." Our kids need godly mothers and godly fathers and godly grandparents and godly aunts and uncles and godparents and neighbors. They need godly adults in their lives to influence them and to train them and to show them what it means to love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, and all your might, and to love your neighbor as yourself. A few years ago, I gave my wife a card which said, "The greatest gift a father can give his children is to love their mother." That's important. But I submit to you that there's a gift that's even greater. The greatest gift a parent can give their child is to demonstrate a love for God that spills out into a godly character. Amen. So what kind of gift are you giving your children right now? Can they see God's hand at work through you?
This program is a production of the Media Ministry at New Salem Baptist Church. Music courtesy of Jason Shaw at audionautix.com. If you enjoy this program, we would love to hear from you. Email us at info@newsalembaptist.net. Thank you for listening.